Hello and welcome back to Project Pod. I'm Marietta Sandilands and this is my monthly podcast sharing stories of people who've developed an idea into a business or project or challenge, sharing what they've learned along the way to hopefully inspire others of you into action. So today I was speaking with Helen Reynolds, and one summer after a wonderful holiday in Portugal, Helen started thinking about how she could get back to Portugal and spend more time by the sea, possibly surfing. And she applied for a sabbatical from her job in London, where she'd been working as a clinical psychologist. And in the run up to the sabbatical, she went and bought a van, which she did up with her family and her friends, which I loved hearing about. And she then drove all the way down to Portugal. She'd originally planned to spend about a month or two in Portugal, but she ended up spending 7 months there. She worked in a surf hostel. She spent a lot of time in the sea surfing. And after some encouragement from her teacher, her surfing teacher at the hostel, he said that maybe she should think about training as a surf instructor. So after some thought, Helen came back to the UK and she did just that. And she now combines both surfing and psychology in her day jobs in a very cool way. And I think that there's definitely things that will resonate with you from Helen's story. She talks about the fear of stepping off the treadmill of what seems like a very secure career, but at the same time wanting to do something different. Helen spoke about how amazing it was spending every day in the sea as well when she was in Portugal, but at the same time how she felt guilty about being on a sabbatical at times and thinking about the pressure of other people's, feeling the pressure of other people's expectations, also questioning the validity of what she was doing at times. But eventually she came to see that there were so many possible ways of living. So I'm going to let Helen tell her story, and I hope that that's what it leaves you with, inspiring you to see that there are many possible ways of living.
Okay, so today I'm here with the wonderful Helen Reynolds. Helen went on a very exciting adventure last year involving vans, surfing, sea, and helping children with mental health difficulties as well more recently. I think I was so inspired to hear her story, and I'm sure you will be too. So Helen, tell us, where did the adventure start? What made you decide to go off in a van to Portugal?
Yeah, I think what makes me chuckle is that I was going back through some notes that I'd got on my phone the other day, and even back in, I think it was about 2014, I'd written a note that was called My Escape Plan. And it was when I'd been away surfing in Morocco for a week and a bit, and I just loved it. And being by the ocean really just kind of felt, I feel really complete when I'm by the ocean. So I'd always had this feeling that I wanted to be by the ocean and I wanted to kind of get out and live a slightly different life, and I never knew how to do it. And then in 2014, I'd done an endurance cycle event and ended up with quite a bad injury that required surgery. And 2015 meant a lot of kind of, surgery, and then an awful lot of rehab. And I wasn't able to use sport to manage emotion and to manage stress, which I guess I was using quite a lot with my job. And I sort of started to feel like the stress levels were getting a little bit out of control and my ability to cope with it was floundering. And I happened to go to Portugal for a week on holiday with some friends, and it was meant to be a surfing trip, but because of the injury I couldn't surf. But I had this week in the south of Portugal in this little place called Sagres that one of my colleagues had recommended, and it was described to me as the Cornwall of Portugal. And it is just the most amazing little place. And I stayed in a surf house, and although I wasn't surfing, I was on the beach every day. And it was this kind of, it was November, and it was this windswept beach, and there were storms coming in, but it was still really beautiful and the atmosphere was amazing. And I just felt this bizarre feeling of like, I need to be here, which a lot of my friends have laughed at me for. but it just felt like this kind of completeness feeling of, I need to be here, I need to find a way of being here more. This is good for my soul. And yeah, I want to do this. And every time I'd come back from holidays previously, I was like, I want to live in Morocco, or I want to move to Indo, or, and I think it always felt like a bit of a harebrained kind of plan. But this time I came back and I was like, no, this is real, this is different. And I thought about how I'd like to do it and chatted to a couple of people at work, and someone said, oh, well, instead of just quitting, why don't you take a sabbatical? You've been in the NHS for long enough now that actually you're entitled to taking leave. Gives you an option to go and explore and travel, but also to come back to your job if you wanted to. And I thought, that's an idea, that's a possible. And I kind of researched it and talked to my boss about it, and they were really supportive, really encouraging of kind of, yeah, just thinking a bit differently and trying to support what I wanted to do. And I talked to a couple of friends and said, guys, I'm thinking of going to Portugal for 6 months, and, or 8 months, I think is what I ended up applying for. And I'd like to get a van. What do you think? And a few friends said, that sounds great, buy a converted van. And they were the friends I should probably have listened to. And a couple of friends said, that sounds amazing, but don't buy a converted van. Buy a van and we'll convert it with you. And I went, well, that sounds really fun. Let's do that. And the adventure started. And that was November I got back, 2015. And then it all kind of spiraled from there. And I bought a van on Christmas Eve as a bit of a Christmas present to myself, and then spent the next 3-4 months doing it up with the help of particularly one of my friends, who was just amazing. He's an absolute legend. He and Al, so Rob and Al, both were brilliant in the planning and the preparation, and then kind of particularly through the build, Rob was amazing, and I've learned so many new things. Built this van and then, yeah, drove to Portugal, worked in a surf house for 6 months, surfed every day, and just thought, this is what I needed. It was really good. So I guess that was where it came from, was there was a culmination of stress and not being able to use my usual coping and wanting something different, and mm-hmm. yeah, just wanting to explore a different way of being and stepping. For me, it felt like taking a step off the hamster wheel that was just thundering along, living in London, working really hard, feeling quite stressed quite a lot of the time, and desperately try and spend your free time doing really fun, exciting things, because that's how you balance your life. But even that becomes kind of a bit of effort to maintain, and I couldn't really see a path forward. Whether it was kind of career-wise, I didn't really want to progress massively career-wise. I enjoyed my job. But then sort of personally, there was no way I could buy a house in London or a flat. I mean, it was just bonkers, the market at the time. It still is. So there was this real sense of, I wanted something to be different, but I couldn't work out what it was. And then here was this opportunity of really going a bit different and a bit off-piste, and
yeah, and you took it. You jumped on it. What was, I'm fascinated to know what the doing up the van, what that was like. What was this, what state was it in when you got it?
So it was a builder's van. So it had, it's a little Ford Transit. She's now called Gertie the glowworm, because she's green. My mother christened her. Mm-hmm. She was just a panel van. So she'd got no windows, no nothing. And so over the course, it was a huge learning curve. I'd never done anything like this. I'd never done any building work. It was mad. And I got a pop top put in her. So the top rises up so you can stand up inside, which is lovely. She's got a solar panel, so she's all run on solar. She's got lights, running water, little sink, gas hob. The woodwork was kind of where it started. So I bought her on Christmas Eve, and then on, I think it was like the 30th of December, I went over to a guitar shop locally and filled her with about 30 pallets that they were just chucking out, and brought them back. And we spent, my parents blessed them, and I spent probably all of New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, and the following day with this massive marquee erected in the garden, like big gazebo thing, in the pouring rain, splitting and separating these pallets, taking out all the nails, and just getting this absolute stash of free wood that I could then use for the build. They were amazing. I think they thought I was a bit bonkers, but they were absolutely amazing. So they, yeah, Mum, I've got photos of it, of them all just dressed up in kind of overalls, hammering out nails from pallets, separating them out with crowbars, and yeah, it was brilliant. So it all started there, and then yeah, got on ever. So all the cupboards and stuff are made by wood. The woodwork was my favourite bit. I'd love to go on and do some joinery stuff. Just working with your hands. And I mean, I was working from 7 in the morning till 11 at night every day whenever I could. So long weekends, taking all my annual leave to do it. Any holiday that I got, just every day, just slogging and learning so much new stuff. Oh, it's brilliant. It was petrifying, but it was brilliant.
And your dad, and I know, I remember you talking at the time saying your dad helped out a lot.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, it's great. So most of the build I did up in Loughborough. So I had my friend Rob helped me the most. And the van was up at his, because he owns a couple of houses, and he'd got loads of tools that he could lend me and give me a hand with. But then at the beginning of April, I brought the van back to my parents. So I moved out of London, brought the van back to my parents. And then Dad kind of got on board, which was brilliant, because I think he really liked having a project, and really liked, he's an engineer, so he really liked kind of building and doing bits and pieces. So he got all the gas plumbed in, I guess that's the word, I don't know. and helped me with lots of little pieces and getting the doors on and some of the woodwork build as well. And for me, it was really lovely working alongside him. I think you don't often get the opportunity as an adult to spend time with your parents, working alongside them. I learned an awful lot from him. Sort of skill-wise, I learned a lot, but also just about his approach and his thoroughness. And it was really lovely to kind of both be tackling this task. And yeah, we'd often work in silence, or just work quietly alongside one another, just getting on with it. And at the end of the day, we both had that real sense of achievement, and it was lovely to share that with him. He was very supportive, as was Mum. I mean, yeah, doing it at home was brilliant. I think just the kind of moral support and encouragement, and the you can do this, you can get through this, but also the physical. And then, because I was working on it in the road, lots of neighbours coming up into Hammond, sticking their heads in, and I've got a neighbour who helped. She made all the curtains for me.
Yeah.
Which was because I was planning on doing it, and she looked at me and said, would you like me to do it? And I think she could see that it was way beyond my skill level. So it kind of became this road enterprise, and yeah, it was fantastic. It was a really fun experience. I loved the journey of it.
How long did it take to build the whole van up so it was ready to go?
Well, it took, I'm trying to think of the dates, it took until, because it had to be re-registered with the DVLA as a motorhome or a motor caravan. It didn't have to be, but I was going to, because it made the insurance better. But I remember the one you had to send the photos off for it. It wasn't quite ready. So we double-sided taped all the doors onto the cupboards and made it look like it was ready, but it wasn't quite there. And that was April. And then it was by the end of April or mid-April, it was done. So, yeah, from December to April.
Yeah, so a good 3-4 months or so of hard work.
Yeah, it was exhausting. And even when I was at work, my head would be half on the build instead of designing things, thinking about things, Googling how do you hang doors, how do you do hinges, what hinges did I need, what electrics do I need, what solar panel should I get, why do you have this rather than a that, or driving across the country to go and pick up a fridge, or all sorts of random things. Yeah, it was an intense thing, but it was, yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah, it sounds like that, and just being consumed, but in a very good way, in a really just let your brain firing the whole time thinking about creating this thing. And so you set off in April to Portugal,
beginning of May. I think it was middle of May to Portugal. Yeah.
And where were you going exactly at this time?
Well, I'd got this lovely plan. I'd got this 8 months off, and I was going to spend a good 6 weeks driving down the coast. So I was going to do the coast of France, west coast of France, north coast of Spain, west coast of Portugal, then spend 2 or 3 months working in the surf house that I'd stayed in the year before, and then spend another couple of months driving back along the south coast of Portugal, south coast of Spain, south of France, and then cutting back up through France and do the west coast and come home. But in the end, and I'd agreed that I would work in the surf house from the June, and I thought, well, if I finish work in April, that gives me April, May to drive down, work June, July, and then have August, September, October, November to do whatever and come back. And I was due back at work at the beginning of December. But then the build took longer than I imagined, and then it suddenly got to the point where I'd got 2 or 3 weeks and I was due to start work in Portugal. That was quite a long way away. It was pretty much as far away as I could get to, and this lovely relaxed touring route down suddenly became this very concentrated, let's just drive really quickly as fast as we can to get to the south of Portugal. So it changed shape as it went along. And yeah, so I ended up just getting down. Took a couple of weeks to drive down, so it wasn't actually that fast, but it was kind of just, let's crack most of the driving and get down. And then when I got there, I just fell in love with the place and the people, and instead of doing 1 or 2 months, I ended up doing 5 months. And then instead of having a very relaxed drive home, meandering along the coast, I ended up just surfing my way back with a couple of friends that I met along the way, and we ended up staying in 1 or 2 places for probably longer than we should, and then it was a bit of a quick drive back to Santander. Yeah. And get the ferry from Santander rather than driving through France. And
but making totally making the most of the time by the sea.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a day was spent not on the ocean. It was literally just every day out there, either surfing or watching the surf or being by the ocean or going for a walk, but mostly surfing. Yeah, it was incredible.
So you went to work in a hostel. Was that, did you have that all arranged before you went, or did you rock up and suss out what was going on when you turned up?
Yeah, no, that was arranged. So that was when I'd been out there the year before, I'd stayed in the same hostel, and I'd been chatting to the owners, who are absolutely lovely, but they'd been slightly struggling, I think, with having young staff who quite liked to party and didn't necessarily take the job too seriously. And it was an exchange job. It was one of those where you work a certain number of hours a day, and in return you get accommodation, breakfast, surf hire, surf lessons. So it was a fantastic opportunity, and I'd been chatting to them when I was out, and sort of when I got back and this scheme all started to come together, I contacted them and said, look, I'd like to come and do it, and sort of sold the slightly more mature I'll get the job done sort of style, and they were really happy with that. So I'd got that set up. I wasn't going to stay for as long as I did, but they were really kind and extended it, and yeah, it worked really well. So I ended up kind of doing probably about 3 hours work a day, every day, 3 or 4 hours. And then in exchange got, I would have got accommodation, but I was actually living in the van, but I could use the bathroom in the kitchen and stuff if I wanted. And then surf lesson every day if I wanted it, surf hire if I wanted it. It was fantastic. So I'd known them before from the year before. And then it just kind of yeah, went from there. And I massively owe my surf development to my boss, because he's the lead coach and he was fantastic. And yeah, really kind of helped me develop as a surfer, but also helped me develop in ambition, I think, about going and becoming a surf coach and trying to do something differently and, yeah, exploring a different way of being, which was really exciting.
Mm.
Yeah.
Could you say a bit more about that experience of the surf training? How much could you surf before you got there? And how did you develop through that training, really, and the support? What was the key from the support that you got from the coach that helped you develop and find that, believe that you could be a surf instructor and then go on to do that?
Yeah, I think, well, before I went, I did surf. But because of the bike race that I'd done, I ended up having knee surgery and had to learn to... So when you surf, you have a particular back leg, whichever feels more natural, left or right foot goes back. When I had the knee surgery, I had to switch, which is really confusing, really difficult, because you're basically learning to write with your non-dominant hand. And when you can do that really well, or not really well, but when you can do it well enough to start with, and then you have to learn to swap, it was just this huge mental battle. I was so frustrated because I was partly really excited that I could do it, because I didn't even know whether I'd be able to surf. I'd got a shoulder injury and a knee injury, and I thought, am I going to be able to paddle? Am I going to be able to hold a position that feels uncomfortable, unnatural? Is my knee going to be able to take the strain of a new position? So I went out with a question of whether I'm going to be able to surf or not anyway. And then when I started to realise that my body could take it, and if I looked after it and did my exercises, then I could surf. It was then starting to become this challenge of, well, let's learn to surf. Switch, let's learn to surf the wrong way around. And that was really frustrating, because I knew exactly what I was meant to do, but your body doesn't always follow suit if it doesn't feel natural. And the instructors out there were fantastic. So they just really, I kind of went back to being a real beginner. But instead of feeling frustrated by it, I felt so supported by them in, well, let's just crack this, let's just keep going, and breaking down every bit of what I was doing and seeing, what do I need to do? How do I get that position right? How do I change that posture? How do I keep going? And my boss, so once I kind of cracked the beginning of it and was getting out there and was feeling back to almost where I was before, I would start to go out with my boss every day, and he would lead the advanced group, and that was really exciting. And then he's someone that doesn't give praise easily. You have to work for it. But when I started, like, he made a couple of comments of, no, you've got this. Like, why are you messing around? Or sometimes I'd get too scared to go for bigger waves. And he'd just say one or two things, and I'd be like, oh, no, maybe I have got this. Maybe I can do this. And if he thinks I can do it, well, his opinion's really valid. So I obviously can do this. Let's just do this. Let's have a try. And he was one of those people that was kind of firm but fair. And just, I think, where I would doubt myself relatively often, he would just not have room for that. You just get on and you do something. And it was a very different, sort of quite a logical, unemotional way of thinking about things. And I think I'm quite an emotional person. So if I get scared or I get frustrated or I get excited, I feel emotions quite intensely sometimes, which can be great if you're happy. But if you're frustrated, then switching that head off and kind of managing to get back out and do some things is hard work. Whereas his way of seeing things was just like, well, let's just get out there and do it. So it wasn't really a choice anymore. It was well, let's just go. The more time you spend in the water, the better you're going to get. Why are you going to get frustrated? Does being frustrated ever help? No. Okay, well, then let's just go and do it. And all of that was kind of, I think, in some ways, his English not being amazing and my Portuguese being non-existent almost meant that the over-analysis or the over-talking of stuff couldn't happen. It's just like, let's just go, let's just do it. And he's like, oh, okay, let's go. So it kind of, yeah, I really liked his approach, and it just meant that I would push myself and go further and harder and try more. Yeah, I loved it. It was great.
So that was about 8 months, was it, that you were a bit less, was it?
So it was eight months off work. It was six months away.
And surfing almost every day. And what was that experience like, going from Hackney to the sea in Portugal, the sun?
Magical.
Yeah.
It was challenging, actually. I find it hard to describe, and I know it sounds really cheesy, but the only way I can describe it is that every time I go back to the sea, I feel like I'm going home. So it doesn't matter where it is, but as long as there are waves, there's a part of me that just breathes, it just relaxes, and I'm just like, oh, I'm home. It's like the longest standing relationship that I've got aside from family is the ocean. And I've not grown up near the ocean, I've grown up just outside London, so I don't know really where it's come from, but that's what it feels like. And being able to be there every day was this sort of mind-blowing incredibleness, that every day I'd wake up, and I mean, it helped that the weather was incredible. So you've got blue skies and sunshine, and it's hot every single day, and you're in the water every single day. It just, yeah. But so frequently I just would sit and watch sunset and over the ocean, and it was just breathtaking. It was beautiful. But it was really difficult. The other side, like, as much as it was mind-blowing and magical, it was actually, I found it really difficult. I felt guilty for probably the first 3 months of being out there. I felt constantly guilty. Every time I kind of relaxed and enjoyed it, I was thinking, I should be in London, I should be working, I should be being a psychologist, I've trained really hard for this. What am I doing having this really long holiday? Yes, that's really nice, but actually this isn't life. And there were lots of questions around what's life and what life should be and ought to be. I found it quite difficult to switch that off and to kind of accept where I was at. And I think I'd been quite preoccupied with the build of the van and the process of that, that I hadn't really stopped and thought about the fact that I was stopping being a psychologist and I was stopping work and that side of things, that when suddenly you're not spending every day building, and yes, you're working every day, but it's actually not, you know, well, I wasn't working that much. I suddenly had quite a lot of time to think and to reflect and to lie in the sun. And yeah, it suddenly I had quite a lot of time. And at the start, that was certainly filled by feeling guilty at times. No, I was going to say, it felt very self-indulgent, I think is the word. And that was hard.
I was thinking even about how people, you know, might be listening thinking, well, you know, it's easy for Helen to do, or she had, you know, felt like she had a connection, she just knew she wanted to go there, it was an easy decision. But I wonder, going back to even before you making the decision, was it easy making the decision, or was that, how long did it take you to, from the sort of the germination, the idea to actually going?
Weirdly, it didn't feel like there was any other decision I could have made. It didn't feel like a hard decision. It was like, well, that's what I'm doing, obviously. There was no, at times I sort of thought, God, it's a bit bad. Are you really sure? But there was no questioning. As we drove back to the airport in Portugal, when I'd been out there on the holiday, I'd been chatting with my two friends who I'd gone with, and we were talking about, how do you make this lifestyle work? How could you make it work if you came out for 6 months? And I was already starting to think, well, if I could take a career break, if I could do this, if I got a van and I drove down, and it had already started before I'd even left Portugal. Mm-hmm. And then when I came back, I've been so many times where I've been on holiday and I've come back and said, I want to do that full time. I want to be out there. I want to go back. I want to have an extended break. But it had never quite felt achievable. I'd certainly had that feeling when I came back from Morocco, but there were so many things that felt felt like there were so many barriers in the way. Whereas this time I couldn't see the barriers. There just didn't seem to be these barriers. It just felt like, no, this is actually doable. It's like, oh, okay, let's do it. Let's go. So the decision making around it that wasn't difficult. That was just a case of, I'm doing it. How am I going to do it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And having gone and done things, I guess, pursued things that you knew you loved, and having done that previously, the importance of keeping on doing that, really, and chatting about it with friends and kind of trying to come up with an idea. So the 8 months came to an end and you were meant to go back to work. And what happened around that time?
Well, what happened was I looked up the terms of my sabbatical. So before I took the career break, I had absolutely every intention of going back to work. So I thought this would be an opportunity to kind of do this amazing thing and have this amazing trip. But actually, I really loved the team that I was working with. We'd just had some fantastic training and I felt like we'd all really bonded as a team, and I'd found it really difficult to leave. Although I knew it was the right thing, I'd found it quite hard. And I was really clear that I was coming back to work. No questions asked. I mean, I boxed all my stuff up, but I was pretty much like, yeah, that's still my office. That's still going to be where I am. This is still my team. I'm not really going to say goodbye to people because I'm not really going. So I intended to go back fully. But then while I was away, it just, everything changed. And I realised how different I felt as a person, and how when you step out of that hamster wheel, you see things from such a different perspective. And I'd met so many people. So the surf camp I worked in attracted so many different types of people to come and stay. So you had all sorts of different professionals coming and staying from all across Europe, and each person, or not even professionals, but students or travellers, or there were just so many different people from so many different backgrounds, and people working where I was working and living in Zagreb. You suddenly realise that your view of life and how life should or ought to be isn't the truth. It isn't a fact. It isn't, that's the only way of seeing things. Actually, there are so many other ways of living that just because that's the way you know doesn't mean that that's the way that you should or ought to live. That you could do something different. And the more I spent time thinking about that and out there and surrounded by these different approaches, the more I realised that actually I didn't want to go back to the way things were. And it was at that point, so with the way the career break works, is that if I'd wanted to extend my break or if I wanted to leave, I had to give my notice, which was 3 months. So it got to, I think it was October, November. Yeah. So I knew that by the beginning of September, I would have to give my notice if I wasn't coming back. So by that point, I'd been off since April already. And I'd spent almost all of August really trying to just think about, do I want to carry this on? What do I want to do? How could life be different? What would I want if I wasn't working? How would I fund myself? Where would I be? The kind of the practicalities of, if I'm going to give up this job, which is a fantastic job, but means living a life that I'm not 100% happy in, how is it going to work? And starting to try and come up with a plan. I'd actually got to the point where I'd made the decision that I was going to quit, and I got some news about family ill health, and that actually just solidified my decision. And I knew then that even if I was going to come back to the UK, then working wasn't an option at that point. I wanted to leave myself open enough that if I needed to do other things or help people out or be around and be available, then coming back and working wasn't going to help. I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I just knew that I couldn't do what I had been doing. And over that time, I'd sort of got used to knowing that not knowing is okay and feeling much more comfortable with that. Whereas before, I think a lot of my friends would recognise that everything had to be planned out and mapped out, and I would be so organised and so kind of calculated and know what I was doing and when I was doing it and what I was doing. And here was me going, I don't know what I'm going to do, but something will work out, because it does work out if you allow room for it to do so. And if I just go back to work, then what's the whole point of having all of this time off and seeing all these different ways of living if you're just going to go back to something that wasn't making you happy because you ought to go back or because you should go back? What about actually let's see things differently, let's keep going with this idea? So I made the decision to leave, and it was one that was, I was really comfortable with, but I think what was interesting was that other people, particularly family, but I think maybe friends as well, were surprised by and concerned by, because I think they'd seen how hard I had worked to get to where I was and felt like this was a huge change and I was potentially throwing something away that was valuable. And not having been on that journey inside my head and across Europe, I think it's quite difficult for people to understand. Unless they've done it themselves or had experience themselves, then I think certainly my parents found it really puzzling as to why I would have worked and trained as hard as I had for a really well-regarded job that did a lot of good, and I would decide to quit it all with the idea that I'm going to go and become a surf instructor. and that was a really kind of boggling, bizarre idea. And yeah, it took, I think I hadn't appreciated how bizarre that was. But then I guess they're from a generation where my dad qualified from uni and went and became an engineer and worked in the same company until he retired, which is a very different way of doing things to what I was doing. So it was an interesting time, challenging time, but I'm just really thankful that, I don't know, that I just persisted with it, that I had felt it enough and knew enough that that's what I was going to be stubborn and headstrong about, and it was the right thing to do. And yeah.
Yeah.
Thankfully it was. Mm.
And that was at the end of last year when you came back.
Yeah. So that was, I made the decision in August, gave my notice in September, and arrived back in the UK in end of November.
Yeah. And this, with this plan to train as a surf instructor, but arriving back in the middle of winter in England, where did you go next from there?
So much to everybody's delight and amusement, I got back, I think I was home for 2 days, and then I drove to Bristol and sold kaleidoscopes in the winter market until Christmas Eve, and spent the next 6 weeks driving between Bristol and Southampton, working the Christmas market, selling these most beautiful handcrafted brass kaleidoscopes that are just this pure piece of magic that everybody should go and check out. The Illusion Adventure kaleidoscopes, they're going to be in Christmas markets this year. I shall also be selling them in Bristol. So I arrived back, I've quit my job as a psychologist, I decide that I'm going to become a surf instructor at some point, but in the meantime I'm going to go and sell kaleidoscopes in a market and spend 10-12 hours a day outside in the cold and sleeping in my van in the UK, which is not built or insulated enough for the UK winter. Yeah, it was a bit bonkers. but it passed time.
I can imagine, only imagine the freezing cold after being in amazing Portugal and then coming back to the biting cold, and particularly in, if you were in Bristol where it's with the water nearby. So you went to go and train as a surf instructor. Whereabouts did you go to do that?
Yeah, so I talked about it when I was in Portugal, and my boss had said, you know, you really should go and do this. You'd be brilliant. I knew that I needed to get my surfing better before I did the qualification. And I knew, so I looked at what my options were, and I'd managed to find a course that was in April because I didn't particularly want to be in the UK waters before then because it was going to be really cold and I'm a bit of a wuss. So I'd found this course in April that I thought, because my boss in Portugal had said, if you've managed to train and qualify, then he would try and find a way for me to go and work with him over the summer this year, which was fantastic. So I thought, okay, great, I've got a goal. If I could get out to him by June or so, then I could do the same and do another 6 months, or go out in May and do 6 months. So I thought, I'll go for the April training. But I thought, I need to get my surfing up before then. Where can I surf that's warm? Because I'm not surfing in the UK. And so I took myself off to Sri Lanka for a couple of months in, when did I go? February. So I went to February, March, April time, and had 2 months out there. Again, surfing every day, met some lovely, lovely people, ate some amazing food, and just considered myself very lucky. It felt quite pressured that I had, my goal was to really get my surfing up. So it felt like I wasn't there on holiday, but I was there really just to train. And I just got fitter and stronger, and my surfing got much, much better. And I had the absolute pleasure of surfing with a brilliant teacher out there who really built my confidence and helped me improve technically. So that I came back feeling like, yeah, okay, I'll go into this with feeling like I can do this, which was brilliant. So yeah, so I had time out in Sri Lanka, came back, picked up the van, which was lovely to be back in her, drove down to Newquay, and then you do like a 5-day beach lifeguard qualification and then a 2-day surf instructor training. So I did that with Era Adventures, who are brilliant. It was a really tough week, particularly the lifeguard training, the amount of information that you need to learn and to kind of take on board and be able to apply was really intense. It was a while since I'd kind of used my head that much to learn all of the medical stuff and all of the beach safety, but it was brilliant. It was really nice to be that physically active and demanding, or to have such a demanding week. But yeah, did it, passed, we all passed, which was brilliant, and did the surf instructor course and passed that, and yeah, it all suddenly started to feel like this was a possibility that I might be able to go on and do some instructing, and we'll see where it led to.
Mm-hmm. And was that what you went to go and do immediately after the training? Did you start instructing, or...?
So the way it works is that you have to do 20 hours supervised instructing, so that you can see different people instructing. So you shadow for a while, you get to see how different people instruct. You get to practice your own technique and your delivery and your safety, and then you can get signed off. So I then used that opportunity to work with two or three different schools to kind of build up my hours. And it gave me some experience of really seeing, yeah, how people do things differently and how I might want to be as a teacher and what I want to do. But what was the most exciting for me was that during the training, there had been three other guys on the course who were all volunteers with the WAVE project. And that's a surf therapy charity. So they get kids with, I think, anybody from 6 to 18. I might be wrong on the lower age limit. But they get kids with any kind of difficulty, say mental health problems, social communication difficulties, physical disabilities, and get them surfing. And it's a 6-week course where they come along. So they have one slot every week for 6 weeks. And at the end of it, they're then very welcome to join the surf club and come along regularly and carry on their surfing. And so they're a charity that I'd already read about when I was working as a psychologist and was really keen to try and get involved in. And then when I did the surf instructor training and I met the guys, they were like, oh, come along, come and work as a mentor, come and get involved, which was really exciting. And then I did. And I then got to meet the fantastic Tom Butler, who's one of the UK's big wave surfers, who's the Mid-Cornwall coordinator for the WAVE project. And he's just been absolutely brilliant. He's inspiring to work with. He's so good with the kids. But I learned a lot from kind of watching him. And he took me through the 20 hours and signed me off as an instructor. And then I've been working with them since. So you do your 20 hours. So I'd got the opportunity to work. So I worked with the Wave Project. I also worked with a couple of other schools, Newquay Activity Centre particularly, who were brilliant. Gave me loads of hours, got me shadowing and kind of got me skilled up really quickly. Mm-hmm. And Headland, so Surf Sanctuary. And then, yeah, got signed off and then could start taking on work as a as an instructor. And then mm-hmm. that's been pretty much my summer and time since. So it's been a bit of a mix between the different centres. But yeah, it's been really, really exciting.
I was wondering how has that been from being a traditional therapist working with kids in, you know, in a room, and how was it then to going to working in a totally different setting with people who, you know, who've got a completely different training? What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was really interesting, actually. I think one of the things that was driving me was that when I was working in CAMHS, there were several times where actually I just felt working in a clinic room wasn't working. And I just thought, you know what, this is just too intense for these young people. We're talking about some really, really difficult stuff. And being sat across from each other, no matter how we tried to dilute it, whether it was through drawing, colouring, art, building, whatever, you were still in this very, very intense environment, and it felt uncomfortable at times. And I know that that's useful sometimes to sit with that discomfort, but actually it almost felt like a barrier to working with some of these young people. And I just, there were parts of me that were screaming out going, oh gosh, just get them in the water, let's just get them surfing. If these young people can have an experience of themselves in a different environment, if they can experience their bodies as being strong and supportive rather than a negative body image of something that's letting them down or feels disgusting, or if they can, thinking about eating disorders, for example, you know, if they enjoy surfing, they've got to eat because they need their bodies to be strong. So it's like, well, let's do something where you're using your body, you're building your strength, you're building that body image. So for me, there was something really important that kind of drove a lot of my change in direction, was that actually, if I can find a way of working with young people where they can experience themselves differently in a different environment, then I think that can only be a good thing. And the Wave Project for me has been a really useful way of working. I think it, because it's the way it's set up, normalizes just coming together, just learning. So everybody's in the same boat. Everybody's learning something new. Everybody's got something going on for them, whether it's a difficulty communicating with others, with sort of like a social communication, so autism, or whether it's a difficulty with concentration and attention, or anxiety, low mood, whatever it is, there's something for everybody. Now, they don't necessarily share that from the outset. They may not share that at all. But what it does is creates an environment where everybody's supportive of everybody else. So you may not know what's going on for everybody else there, but you're all in it together. You're all going to learn to surf together. You're all going to try something that's really hard. You're all going to get frustrated. You're all going to feel really rubbish. You're all going to fall off. And suddenly you're working as a team and encouraging other people. And as a mentor, you can be that encouragement for the young people. But then what you also start to see is the young people start to encourage each other. So there was one lovely moment where one of the kids was really struggling and couldn't do it and was having a bit of a bad time with the surfing, was like, well, I can't get to it, I haven't had a single good wave and I can't do it. And one of the other kids was just like, do you want to come and surf with me? Let's get a party wave, let's surf together. Why don't you try this wave? Why don't we do it like this? Or have you tried doing that? And you just think, this is fantastic, because it's just building each of their own confidence and their ability to work together and their ability to support one another in that, and to feel like they've got a team and they've got people there to help. And yeah, it's such a different context. And you know, I've had days where, because you're following the same kids throughout the 6 weeks, you build those relationships. So they come in some days and they've had a rubbish week at school, and you chat about it, and not in a therapist client kind of let's talk about it, let's unpick it, but it's like let's just chat about it. And it does give you that opportunity to kind of get in there and be like, oh, okay, well, if that, you know, but why, what happened there, where did that come from? Or is, you know, if you were feeling really frustrated, but you get really frustrated with surfing, like we get, I get really frustrated with that, how do you manage it here? Is there anything that you can then take on and try in school or with so and so or in those situations? So it kind of gives you a little bit of an opportunity to influence those lives a bit more than just on that Saturday morning or Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense. But that's, yeah.
It sounds like such a lovely way of describing it, really, and this building of a kind of healthy community and everyone contributing to that. And just how lovely it is for people to have that opportunity, particularly when if in that quite isolating experience with whatever difficulty it is, just lovely, as you said, to have something like the Wave Project bring them together and allow them to be, you know, to be strong for each other, or to be, you know, that failing is absolutely normal and part of it and essential. You've got to let go and allow yourself to fall off the board, because that's part of it.
And it really does, it creates this environment where you can do a lot of, it normalizes difficulty. So it normalizes struggling, it normalizes challenge, and it also normalizes resilience. So, or it builds the resilience in dealing with that. So it's not that odd clinic environment where somebody comes and they're automatically the person who's got a problem, and we're there to solely talk about their problem and how they're going to fight it. It suddenly becomes this community group where they do, I think you're right, it builds that community where they come together, they're a team, they support each other, all of them have difficulties, we talk openly about finding things tough or struggling, or if they want to. And they can be accepted as somebody who might have a tough time with X, Y, and Z, but is also building strength and competence with their surfing, and they get to experience themselves in a really positive way. And when they make progress, that's really acknowledged, and we celebrate that with all of them, not in a patronizing way, but in a like sharing the stoke. If someone's got an awesome wave, everyone's really excited for them, because we all know that feeling of having an awesome wave, and it's just so cool. So you get to do this really positive, fun, exciting, strength building sport with this kind of community setting, and within that you can, I think, almost by bringing the positive side of it, it almost opens people up to be able to talk about the difficult stuff as well. Whereas I think sometimes in a clinic room we lose the positive, we lose that ability to acknowledge all of the good things that are going on, and maybe we don't offer the opportunity to have those experiences. And for me, bringing both together really seems to work.
I wonder what I know your work plans are, so they've evolved, and you're going to go and work in, so carry on with what you're doing and go to start working as a psychologist in a local CAMHS child and adolescent mental health service, and I wondered what do you think, what will you bring to that with this whole adventure, this experience that you've been on, everything that you've learned, what do you think going back into this system, what do you think you'll bring to it that's different to how you were before?
Oh, that's really interesting. I don't know. I think I'm more relaxed and can take a bit more of an observer view of things. I think when I was working full-time, the post I'm going into is part-time, and one of the reasons I wanted to do part-time is I'm hoping I can retain more of a slightly detached view from work. I think when you're in it and in amongst it all of the time, it can be quite difficult to separate from the challenges that families are facing. So it can feel like you're quite immersed in what's going on, which for me stifles my curiosity and ability to question what's going on or to see different opportunities or paths or to be a bit more creative. And I'm hoping that by being a bit more detached enables me to have a slightly wider viewpoint, which might mean I'm more curious or might mean I have more ideas or might mean that I don't see it as my role to fix the problem, but more as my role to offer a space to help the family or the young person to think about what solution they might need and how they might get there. Which might sound a bit, I don't know whether it's whether other people get that, but for me there was always a sense of whose problem is it and whose is the responsibility to change the problem or to change how the situation. Mm-hmm. And certainly when I was immersed in it, I often felt like it was my responsibility to solve every problem and to change every situation. And I think the time away from working in psychology has helped me understand that there are 101 different ways of thinking about things. And just because the way that you are thinking about it now might be a dominant story or a dominant narrative that you've been brought up with, there might be 20 different narratives around that you could, why do you have to pick that one? Why can't we look at what is a different way of seeing this or conceptualizing it? Or so I think it's kind of opened my mind and it's almost helped me shift responsibility back to those that I'm working with, which is mm-hmm. where it should sit. I think also it's made me a bit more fun and a bit more creative, and I've got a lot more energy. I've moved down to Newquay permanently now, which is really exciting, a little bit petrifying, but really exciting. For me, being by the ocean, as I've said, it gives me that energy, it gives me that kind of completeness. So I'm kind of hoping that if I've got that in my life every day, then yeah, dealing with any kind of stress is going to be that little bit easier. So I'm hoping that I'll go back into work feeling more energized and have more kind of interest in what I'm doing, maybe more mm-hmm. curiosity, more energy mm-hmm. to try and do things differently. Yeah, I'm hoping that anyway.
I think this is a great place to finish, just hearing, it's been so fascinating hearing your whole story. And I think just my last question I wanted to ask before finishing, because part of why I started this podcast was really to show people about different ways of working, the value of having a project, going and exploring, even though you don't know exactly where it's going, letting go of this expectation of a perfect endpoint. And I wondered if you have any advice for people who they might have an inkling that they'd love to have their own project, go on their own adventure, but they're very much, you know, feeling the responsibility to be doing the sensible thing or in their job and being afraid of stepping off what's seen as a sensible route, and will they ever get back on again? What would you say to someone who's thinking about it but almost a bit scared to go for it?
I totally get it. I think it is the scariest thing that you will ever do. Maybe I haven't lived enough, but for me, it was the scariest thing that I've ever done, was to step away from a life that felt so mapped out and planned and secure, because it was so mapped out and planned. And to go against all of your better judgment of, I should be doing this, and if I stay in this job, then da da da, and if I leave it, then, oh, what if I don't get that annual leave allowance because I've taken time out of service, or what if I don't go back on the same band, or what if I, this means I'll never get another psychology job again, or all of the what ifs. If it's meant to work out, it will work out, and suddenly your perspective of what you want and what it should be will shift dramatically, because you suddenly realize there are so many different opportunities or different ways of seeing things or understanding things, and you start to work out actually what's important to you, not what people have told you is important. And for me, it's been just learning to trust what you need and listen to what you need. And once you start doing that and you stop judging yourself for doing that and giving yourself a hard time because you're not working a 40-hour week trying to slave away and help people, actually, I need to be by the ocean. I need to work part-time. And as soon as I can do that, then it opens up your eyes to doing things differently. And then you'll find the bit that fits for you. You'll find the path. It does work out. You just have to trust it. And it's petrifying, but it's hugely exciting. And yeah, just do it. Just do it.
Helen, thank you so much. It's been so good speaking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's been great. Welcome.